Welcome to episode 45 of Offbeat Tracks. I am Max. What the hell? I'll just rhyme today. I haven't rhymed in forever, so why not?
Everyone likes it. They told me you should do it every time.
Okay. Yeah. No. No. Literally no one said that to you.
That's... I said it to myself. Okay. Yeah. Like, I live alone.
We have a little bit of offbeat current event news, in that I saw a concert this past week concerning some artists that we both like and have talked about on this show before. Mm-hmm. I saw the Total Package Tour, which was Boys...
Is that the name of it?
Yeah. It was Boys to Men, New Kids on the Block, who I both was like, okay, cool. They were the bonus. They were the bonus package, but the crux was Paula Abdul. I have to say, she was absolutely incredible.
Really? She always seems out of it to me, but maybe on stage she's...
She is 54 years old and can dance better than basically any 25-year-old I know. I mean, wow. It's unreal.
So she's like really good in concert. I always kind of wondered.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's going to see her for The Voice, first of all. So they're very obviously like they run her voice through some kind of vocal processor. I'm not exactly sure what they're doing. She's definitely singing live because she's like improv-ing and throwing a lot of hey's and ho's and hey, what are you doing? You know, looking at people in the audience. Yeah. So she's singing live, but they're definitely processing her voice in some way.
Okay.
In some way that's like boosting it. You know, they're compressing it or something. Is pretty common for people who might have like a naturally just thinner voice.
Most pop performers, really, anyway.
Yeah, not Gaga.
That's very true. She can sing.
Yeah.
She was like one of four.
Yeah, not Gaga. I've seen her 3 times. She's singing live the whole time. Mm-hmm. But Paula, just her show was amazing. She dances in front of this big screen, and she does a lot of dances like that coordinate with animations that are on the screen, and it's just all very well timed and very well choreographed.
MC Scat Cat there?
MC Scat Cat was there. Yes.
He made an appearance. That's who everyone was there for.
That's right. She did at least part of all 6 of her number one singles, which I was very excited about. Even Promise of a New Day got thrown
in
there.
That's a jam.
Yeah.
Did she do Rush Rush?
She did.
Oh my God, I think that's like the most romantic song ever written.
She did almost the entire thing. right when the song started, some lady like 2 rows in front of me goes, "Where's Keanu?"
It's an apt question. She has a point. They should have put Keanu on the screen.
Oy. Anyway, yeah, it was a great tour. I had a lot of fun. If you're into that kind of thing,
I think I'm gonna make that T-shirt.
Go see them.
Where's Keanu?
New Kids on the Block. I was bored as hell because they just aren't my thing, and I don't care about them.
See, I enjoyed them like 5 or 6 years ago when I saw them.
I will say though that hearing Donnie Wahlberg sing gave me great appreciation for his acting career.
Wow.
Deep appreciation, and we'll just leave it at that. Boys to Men were fabulous, by the way. They did One Sweet Day, and they made the audience sing Mariah Carey's part.
Oh my God!
And they said they had never done that before, and I was like, yeah, whatever. But I looked up the set list from the other stops on the tour, and it was not on there. So I wonder if they were just like testing it out that night, or if they had added it the night that I saw them. I don't know. It was very, very cool. Good show.
Super awesome.
So anyway, on to this week. We are talking about I cannot believe we've waited 45 episodes to talk about Louise Tucker.
When you actually said that, like, should we do a Louise episode? I was like, you were like, is that good? I was like, I don't know. It's just weird that we haven't done it yet.
Right. We note sort of in the tagline of this podcast that we met each other in high school and bonded over our love of weird music. This is like one of the first artists that we ever really bonded over.
Yeah, this is.
Because I discovered Louise like right after high school, or maybe like senior year of high school. Mm-hmm. But I remember playing her for you, and you were just into it. I knew you would be the only other person I knew who would be into Louise Tucker.
It's an interesting combination of things.
Yeah, it's
a contrast, if you will. It's a situation.
It's a very specific, it's a very niche thing. Yeah.
Every person I've played this for, like in my whole life, is maybe they're not like, I don't know about this, but they're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
And I'm like, the best.
So we're about to set you up for something super offbeat today. I mean, this is pretty different. Louise was born in Bristol in the United Kingdom, just to give you a little background on her. And she is a classically trained opera singer.
Yep, sure.
And that
is
still what she does now. That's what she's up to now. She tours with opera companies, and she, I read somewhere that she teaches opera.
I do
as well.
Too. I kind of want to take a class.
So at some point in the early 1980s, she meets up with these 2 dudes. I still don't quite know how. I read on some site that it was through a babysitting thing.
Yeah, like it was, I don't know if this is true, but this is what I read somewhere, that it was like Tim Smith's like sister-in-law was there to like babysit his kid, and she was like friends with the sister-in-law and came along. And I don't know I guess, opera.
And then what? Just started singing opera.
Like, there's some
baby. Okay.
There's like some steps in the story that are missing.
Yeah.
But you know, it's whatever. It's 1982.
Right. So anyway, she meets up with these two dudes, Charlie Scarbeck and Tim Smith. Charlie Scarbeck, he is quite a prolific record producer and songwriter. Mm-hmm. He's very reclusive, though. I never could find any interviews with him or anything like that. So he seems pretty, you know, keeping to himself kind of a dude. He has a whole lot of credits, though, with classical music, not so much with pop music. Then you got this other guy, Tim Smith, who, did you look up any background on this guy?
Oh, God, no, I should have probably.
No, he's not, he, like, was not even a record producer. He was born in the Netherlands, but he was based in the UK.
Okay.
He was a freaking archaeologist.
A fucking course.
But isn't that so fitting, like, with what this thing turned out to be?
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was an archaeologist and then just decided to try to stick his hands into songwriting and producing and now somehow hooked up with Charlie and Louise.
Now I'm wondering, like, just that whole story, how that even came up.
Like, I know. I know. Like, how do you meet an archaeologist who's like, you know, I think I would like to make some classical synth pop?
He's like, oh, hello, I'm Tim. He's like, hi, I'm Louise. I'm an opera singer. And he's like, hey, I just got this idea.
Kawinky dink. We should make an album together. Where me, I've never played a synthesizer before in my life, but I'm going to find a record producer who will let the two of us play synthesizers.
I just heard the Human League on the radio. Heard the Human League on the radio, right. And I got an idea. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of weirdness in this story. Yeah. Now, Louise used to have a website that had some info up about her, but her website's been down for a few years, and archive.org does not have any of the relevant pages archived for the About. Wow. So I couldn't go back and get her story from her hand. So I was working on my memory and what I could remember from reading on Louise's website like a decade ago. And for some reason, one of the only facts that stuck with me is that the artwork for her second album was destroyed in a flood in a factory in Holland. I remember that being on the website, and I was like, oh, that's sad.
I don't want to be like, you know, I don't want to do like a country stereotype thing or just like, oh my God, of course, but just know that I'm thinking it.
Okay.
That's I'm not going to say it.
So anyways,
flood in the Netherlands.
Yeah. And somehow, why are you scoffing at a flood in the Netherlands?
Did the dike overflow?
Oh, okay. All right. Anyway, sorry. Moving on.
Continue. Floods.
Somehow.
Get insurance.
Yes. Hashtag get flood insurance. This broadcast brought to you by... not really. We don't have a sponsor. If you want to sponsor this podcast, email us right now.
We love insurance.
Offbeattracks@gmail.com. Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll sell literally anything. Anyway, so somehow Charlie Scarbeck, Tim Smith, and this opera singer Louise Tucker get together and make this album in 1982 that was called Midnight Blue. And that was also the title track of the record.
Yeah.
This was a hit everywhere,
which
by the way.
Crazy.
Like,
to me,
all over Europe. It even charted in the U.S.
Right.
It charted top 40 in the U.S. And that's just nuts.
I know. It's just weird because it's...
We're about to have a classical music lesson. This is based on a Beethoven piece.
Yes.
That is called Sonata Pathétique.
Mm-hmm.
It's the second movement specifically of the piece. And I have a little clip of it for you here. This is what it sounds like. This is being performed by a guy named, I have to take a crack at pronouncing his last name, but his first name is Daniel and his last name is, I'm guessing it's pronounced Baron Boim. Barenboim. And this is his very lovely performance of Beethoven's Sonata Number 8, the Sonata Pathétique. Yeah, it's a very beautiful song. And so, yeah, Louise and Charlie and Tim took this and made it into a little pop song called Midnight Blue, and they wrote these perfect pop lyrics. I mean, the way this works as a pop song is amazing.
A sweet little pop song, and it's weird because it's like synth with the opera, but it's like, it's so beautiful and sweet and such a good pop song.
It's just like made to be in an 80s movie at like a dance scene.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
When the guy's love has just left him and he's like left alone at the dance. Like, that's exactly what this song is.
Beautiful.
By the way, one more word about Sonata Pathétique. The viewers of Seinfeld will recognize Sonata Pathétique, specifically the first movement of it, because it's from the episode where the Pez dispenser gets put on Elaine's leg, and it's the recital piece that George's girlfriend Noelle is playing. So that's the same piece.
I totally didn't Midnight even Blue notice that. That is true.
There you go.
Man.
That's Charlie Scarbeck, by the way, doing the male vocals in that song.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The next single they dropped was Only For You. I love this song.
It's very
this,
good.
Again, based on another couple of pieces. Oddly enough, though, I could only find notation for one of the pieces, and I'll explain in just a moment. The main piece is based on a piece from the 1950s that was written by a producer named Ronald Benge, a composer, rather, named Ronald Benge. And it was first performed, it was a big hit for the Mantovani Orchestra in the early 1950s. Do you know who Mantovani is?
No.
My first job was in a record shop.
Oh.
And I remember there were like a lot of old Mantovani, like 45s and even like 78 RPM records lying around. So he was like...
Probably one of those like, prolific like orchestra...
Yeah, people. He was like the adult contemporary of the early 1950s.
Okay. Kind of like Herb Alpert records later on.
Yeah, like, something
like
that.
I have like millions of Herb Alpert records.
Exactly.
Because I think he made 400.
But here's a piece of the Elizabethan Serenade that became Only For You. So yes, very, very nice. I say I think there's a second piece involved is because the bridge of this song when mm-hmm. Louise starts doing the crazy
I love
vocals
that build up.
I'm pretty sure that's Moonlight Sonata, Beethoven Moonlight
Might
Sonata
be.
Here I brought a clip up of it and you tell me I don't know, what do you think?
I mean, I can see it.
I mean, it's the same progression.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm surprised Beethoven did not get a writer credit on that. By the way, that's one of my favorite things about owning Louise Tucker records. If you get up the 45, it says written by Scarbeck, Smith, and Beethoven on the writer credit.
I wonder who
credit.
Gets the royalties.
I don't know.
For that, for Beethoven. Who's in charge of Beethoven's estate? I'm sorry, that's illegal. That's for our legal version of a podcast.
Louise would only drop one more single off this record. It was called Hush. This kind of abandoned the classical idea, in my opinion. This was more of a just kind of an 80s ballad.
Yeah, it has an unnecessary sax.
Oh, yes. The 80s sax.
Yeah. That's the actually the only note I wrote.
The ubiquitous 80s sax.
Yeah. I'm like, oh.
And Charlie sings on this one a bit, too. Mm-hmm. Just not, I don't know why they thought this was going to be a hit. It's pretty boring song.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not one of my favorites at all, but there is an unnecessary sax for those who are fans of that.
And one more we got to talk about that should have been a single, but wasn't.
It should be the single.
It should
yeah.
be the single. This would have been a big hit, I think.
I think so, too.
It's called Waiting for Hugo.
It's perfect.
It's a song about being left at the altar.
Waiting for Hugo.
Waiting for Hugo. Where could he be? We don't know.
It's such a fun song.
Yeah.
It's a good, fun pop song.
It's a beautiful song.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay, there's a little hint of the classical with that little synth motif that they play in, you know, throughout. But this is pretty straightforward, like 80s pop rock.
Yeah, you could play this somewhere and it would be like weird vocals, but it's not that weird.
No. Her voice just, it works for mm-hmm. it, even though she's an opera singer.
Just depends on how she's singing something.
So cool. We've been waiting here for half an hour. Louise dropped her next record called, After the Storm. Thank you. I had a moment there. After the Storm came out in 1983. And kind of, for the most part, sort of abandoned this whole modern classical thing.
It's much poppier.
There are a few things on there that still do the modern classical, and we're going to get to one glorious one in a bit. Man. But, yeah, she kind of tried to go the traditional, or the, I guess, modern pop route.
Yeah. I mean, if you only had listened to this album of hers, you may not even get that the opera thing, because it's just her voice kind of works in a way that wasn't really that crazy for...
Yeah, I totally agree.
She's not doing crazy stuff, but it's
much more poppy. I totally agree, because there was a lot of weird stuff going on with New Wave, so to have just this lady who's singing super high, it's...
Yeah, it did not even stick out.
Plus, Kate Bush had been around for a few years, so the Brits were already... They were used to it. So, yeah, you got No Tears to Cry, which is kind of just this mid-tempo breakup song, I guess. I don't know. It's cute.
It's just a pure pop song to me. It's cute. It's pop.
I'm kind of surprised it didn't chart in the U.S. at all. I mean, just considering what its contemporaries were, it seems like it should have fit right in.
Yeah, but I agree.
Nope, did not chart.
This is my second favorite one.
Oh, Dancing by Moonlight? You
know,
like this one?
My first favorite one.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have the same favorite one on this record. Don't worry. We're going to get there. Yeah, this is like... Dancing by Moonlight is like the song about the family barbecue.
I really like it because it's like pure synth pop.
Oh, yeah.
Not too much opera. Like, it's just... I don't know. It's also but ephemeral.
Yeah,
like,
it is. It's fun, but ephemeral. It's got like this very like Scandinavian flugelhorn thing going on in the background, too, which...
It's a little weird.
It just works.
But it's like, it works, and I don't know. I love pop songs and synth pop that also can be emotional and like ephemeral.
Yeah.
And I love that. It's just like a perfect example of it. I like synth that makes you feel, Max.
Yes, I agree. And this, you know... I think it's a sweet notion, the whole, I live far away from home and I'm going to go home and see my family.
Yeah.
It's cute. Louise took another crack at a straightforward ballad, kind of like Hush on the last record, with the title track After the Storm, which is mostly just a very calm... This is basically her showing off her opera voice, I think.
Yes. It's the most... Well, not the most opery. I'm so excited to get to this next song.
You don't think this is more operatic than the next one we're going
to
talk about?
To me, it's the Louise kind of operatic, which is like the weird thing. Like, I know, I mean, this song... Song kind of does nothing for me. If it comes on, I listen to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you are a person who likes classical music, and especially if you like opera music, you will be into this song.
Yes.
This will be your favorite one on the record.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very much just a
solid
vocal performance.
We have a lot of classical music aficionados.
Who knows? Maybe this is how they get their kicks listening to us. So we finally have saved the greatest for last.
I wish I had a full voice because I just feel like you have to full voice this.
Yes, but I can't even like I can't just write George when we talk about this song. It has to be George all caps exclamation
point. I was very
excited.
It's
like
when you
George
put that in.
Yes. Because that's how it's said every time in the song. It's just it's very staccato, like George.
Yeah, I can't even hit that note right now.
It's just so good.
It's so good and it's so weird.
It's so weird.
This is the song I always play for people, and they're like, I don't know. But no one ever gets it.
But here's the thing, though.
I don't care.
If you play this for someone who is, like, part of a band or orchestra, especially, like, played in high school or they play in college, and they have their brain in the classical music, and you play this for them, their mind is blown.
Yeah.
Every time. They love this. And for good reason. I mean, the structure of this song is so cool.
It's beautiful.
Because it starts off, you know, with a very soft lull. You're just hearing this one little kind
of,
like...
Her voice is that lull.
It sounds like a flute. It's probably a synthesizer, but it's made to sound like, you know, a flute leading into an orchestra. And then this, you know, this drum track comes in, and she does this beautiful, sweeping vocal performance with these crazy-ass lyrics, including... Our favorite. I light up like a liner that is cruising the Atlantic.
With an old-fashioned band playing old-fashioned tunes that I love.
Well, I mean, that is some damn fine songwriting.
It's fucking romantic.
It is romantic.
Isn't it? Yeah, no, I just love it. Like, to me, her voice is that lull from the beginning. Her voice is an instrument in this kind of, like, little symphony, and it's
for sure. That's a great way to put it.
Her
voice is like the lead violin in an orchestra. Yes, absolutely. Great
way
to put it.
And then, like, when you're, like, beautiful, and then you've got someone yelling, George.
Yeah, and there's this staccato, like, George, that's kind of acting like the percussion section, you know? And it just builds and builds and builds, and then it gets to this climax where you have this, like... Remember, like, when Bugs Bunny would have, like, the Viking helmet, and there was all this dramatic, like, you know, between him and Elmer Fudd? Like, that's what it makes me think of. Or, like, an old-timey silent movie, like, where you should see, like, some lady, like, looking out a window with her hand on her forehead and then mouthing words, and then you get a title card that comes up and says, "No, John, don't leave." It's just, like, this very, like, dramatic breakdown.
Yeah, it is.
That sweeps back into a final verse.
It's a very dramatic song.
Yeah, we can't stress enough. This is the Louise Tucker song to listen to,
yes,
for sure.
Yes, this is the Louise.
It was like not even a single, I don't know why, but Jesus Christ, this is an amazing song.
I wonder how many times we've listened to this together.
I don't know. I don't know how many times I've listened to it buried in my life. But
I remember when it finally got on Spotify, and I like immediately sent you a message like, Max,
I know.
The world has finally
I mean, I would, us. I would legitimately not be surprised if I were close to... 4 digits on the number of times I've listened to this song in my life. I love it that much.
Yeah, before the show, I like put it on repeat for like an hour. Doing work, and I was like, yeah. It's like a cheering section if my name were George.
That's right. That's right. So Louise sort of just dropped off after the storm in 1983. She did resurface a few years ago. I don't know if you saw this. She released an album in 2012 that is called Beyond the Blue. She was selling it on her website, but her website's down now, so presumably she's back out of the music biz and is not selling that record anymore. The great news about Louise, though, contrary to what you might believe, is that you can hear every single one of her songs on Spotify.
And it's great.
It's not organized very nicely into the two albums. They're like greatest hits compilations. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure I went and checked, and I think that all of the tracks from both of her albums are there.
I think they are, too.
So you can listen to the entire thing in nice, high digital fidelity and enjoy Louise like we do.
Did
you notice, by the way, that she does have a Facebook page or had an active Facebook page at some point?
Oh, God. I mean, she's the best.
Yeah.
I like really want to go to England and just take an opera class with her.
It made me happy to just see a modern picture of her. There's only one photo of her. And here, we'll put this up on the show page. But there she is.
That's exactly what I would think she would look like.
Yeah.
That's...
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll just link to this page on the show page. And yeah, she's even, there's a little promo for Beyond the Blue on there that she's no longer selling. But yes, her last post was in 2013. On March 28th, 2013, she wrote Happy Easter XX. And that was the last thing she ever wrote.
Louise.
Come back to us, Louise. She's
slaying me with a happy Easter.
I know.
I hate when other people post that, but when Louise does it, it just works for her.
I would love to talk to Louise just specifically about George. I literally just want to talk to her about George for 2 hours. Like,
how did this happen?
Yeah.
Like, what? What is
whose genius idea was this?
Who is George?
Who is George?
Let's start with, who is George?
That's right.
What if it's her husband?
Aw.
He's like some guy with like, he's just some old British guy with a beard or something.
I think that's like the highest honor you can have if you're married to Louise Tucker, that she writes this sweeping opera song about you.
It's love,
that's like peak Britishness again. I mean, it really kind of is.
It's how they express love in old Bristol.
Lighting up like a liner that's cruising the Atlantic.
You make me feel so dreamy and a little romantic.
That's right. Oh, we love you so much, Louise.
And George.
And George, yes, whoever you are. And Charlie and Tim. So yes. thanks for all the stuff.
And the babysitter. Tim's sister-in-law.
All this beautiful stuff you gave us. These two records. Go listen to them. You won't be disappointed.
So loving it.
We are going to be back with some Canadian high energy next week.
Every other episode.
Some Canadian Italo. Next week. But until then, you can reach us on our website, which is offbeattrackscast.com.
We are also on Twitter at offbeattracks.
Yeah, so please email us and tweet us and tell us how we're doing. Or
I'll try to have a full voice next week.
Tell us what you'd like to hear. And until then, I am Max.
I'm Danielle.
See ya.